Now, let's bring in my good friend Chris Mack. Chris, how you been?
Fantastic, Steve. How are you?
Doing really well. So let's start with the Pirates. No. Okay. Let's get to Penn State to obviously Steeler football here. James Washington wanted a trade, and Mike Tomlin said, nah, I don't think so. How do you view it?
I mean, James Washington doesn't really have much leverage here. The issue is he's well within his rights to request one, but he's a wonderful insurance policy for them right now. He's also way down the depth chart in the not just the receivers room, where he's fourth, maybe even fifth, depending on the week. But he's also, when you dole out touches to all the skill position players, you could argue he's as low as seventh, eighth, ninth because of all the the pair of tight ends, the four receivers, three, four receivers ahead of him, Najee Harris out of the backfield. So there's just not going to be many footballs for him as long as everybody's healthy. But I think, as everyone knows, especially with an extra week added to the season, there's no way everyone stays healthy for the entire length of the season. So, you know, the minute Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster misses even a couple of plays, well, James Washington gets elevated. And he's effective both running from in the slot, where he can take those underneath routes, turn them into something, make tough contested catches, and he's also got the speed to run the routes on the outside. So I think, the final piece to the puzzle is they're not going to get much for him anyway, even if they would acquiesce right to his request. So I think, you know, he's stuck in a holding pattern. I get why he wants to put up better numbers. It's a contract year for him, but it's also a contract year essentially for Juju Smith-Schuster. So maybe Juju's not a Steeler next year. Maybe James Washington still is and is able to move up the chain a little bit. But as it stands right now, he's got to just kind of get in where he fits in.
All right, so then there's the Dotson kid, who I think thinks he's Alan Faneca. Based on Twitter, I think he thinks he's Alan Faneca. I can assure you he's far from it. And on the other part, too, it's like Alan Faneca actually played and practiced. It's been an interesting, because Mike Tomlin doesn't call players out. That's never been his M.O. What does mean this different?
It's interesting to me because we've gotten sort of both sides of the how Mike Tomlin handles young players dichotomy, right? So Kendrick Green, the rookie center, the third-round pick out of Illinois, plugged right in as the starting center from week one of the preseason. Still listed second on the depth chart for whatever that's worth, probably as much as the paper that it's printed on. But plugged right in, and Tomlin has been fairly effusive, at least by his standards for rookies, in his praise of Green when asked about him. Then there's Dotson, on the other hand, who some people claimed in the offseason wasn't working out to the organization's satisfaction, but then he and his sort of offensive line consultant workout guy posted plenty of videos that showed that he appeared to be in shape, got hurt early in camp, missed a lot of time. Tomlin essentially said, hey, he's still a second-year guy, and he hasn't done anything yet this camp. So he's still second in line until he actually starts getting some work in. And Dotson essentially said, yeah, I get it. I haven't done anything yet. So I think it's interesting to me that Mike Tomlin is quite obviously playing a bit of a mind game with Dotson, because he may be the best offensive lineman out of this group right now. Now, that's based on limited snaps that we saw last year, but he did step in and play pretty well when he had to step in for David DeCastro last year. So I think they're confident in what he can do, especially in his second year moving forward. But I also think Mike Tomlin did that thing where he kind of wanted to knock him down a peg and sort of, you know, tick him off, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, get a little burr under his shoulder pad or a little chip on his shoulder and see if that helps motivate him to forcefully take back that number one role at left guard and then translate it into the way he plays on the field. Because that's what they want out of their offensive lineman this year with Harris behind them. They want an offensive line that's going to be aggressive, nasty, running downhill. That's why they promoted Adrian Clem to that offensive line coach position, and Dotson fits in well with that.
All right, then there's an older player like Joe Haden, who's had some, you know, had some nice years with Cleveland, has done a good job with Pittsburgh. Where do you think things stand with him?
You know, from everything I've heard, they're not especially in a hurry to try and negotiate an extension. I personally, just because of the fact that the Steelers have never done very well, certainly not in the last decade or so, at drafting and developing corners, would not mind at all giving Joe Haden a small extension, 2 years on top of what he's already got. His contract's up at the end of this year. Now, that wouldn't be at the current cap hit. He's at about a $13.5 million cap hit, I believe, right now.
Right.
So it would have to be much less than that. And, you know, it might have to include a voidable year or two at the end of the deal so you can pay him now and keep that hit spread out on the books. But I think until the Steelers prove that they know how to draft and develop corners, and maybe this is a year where that happens, maybe they show us that, you know, with the re-signing of Cam Sutton and him getting a starting opportunity, with the emergence of either James Pierre, who's an undrafted second-year guy, or Antoine Brooks, who's a sixth-round pick, second-year kid out of Maryland, if one of those guys should emerge, maybe they show all of us and reassure themselves, hey, we can find corners here and there, even if Justin Lane is a total bust. And so maybe then they say, all right, maybe we don't need to keep Joe around. I think Joe Hayden's in a position where, because he does enjoy being here so much, they don't necessarily have to race to get an extension done before the regular season starts, which is usually their policy, that they could get to the end of the season, see how Hayden performs, and then try to work something out before free agency actually opens, and he would be open and amenable to that.
Usually when teams are going through a contract situation these days, a mega contract situation, it's a quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's not the case here. Obviously, it's T.J. Watt, who's having what is now the new trend. I mean, NFL teams don't like fining guys. All right, so for holding out, they don't like doing it. The player doesn't like it, but the team doesn't like doing it either. So now we have hold-ins. He's there.
He's there, and he's actually doing a fair. You know, the only thing he's not doing really is participating in the 11-on-11s, right?
So right, exactly.
You know what that looks like. You know,
sure,
he's actually out there for a good amount of work. You know, it makes sense really when you consider the fact that two out of the four seasons in the league, Steve, he's been dinged up during camp or during a preseason game. So, you know, I'd much rather have T.J. Watt. Yeah, he's one of those guys, and they have a handful of guys on this team that doesn't have to play a single snap in the preseason, in my opinion, and will be ready to go week one up in Buffalo on September 12th. He's near the top of that list because he, Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, Minka Fitzpatrick, for that matter, Joe Haden, for that matter, don't need a ton, if any, preseason work to be ready to go, because I'd much rather have them ready for weeks, especially if you look at their schedule, you know, weeks 15, 16, 17, 18, when things really get nasty and they may be fighting for their playoff lives.
Okay. So now let's get to the actual contract itself. Everyone's talking about the neighborhood of $30 million. Is it a necessity that this contract is settled? He's under contract for this year, but is it a necessity that a contract is agreed to before he plays this year?
Well, I mean, technically, no. I think if you're T.J. Watt, you want to have some sort of commitment from the franchise so that you can go out and play with a little bit less worry of what happens if I tweak a knee on this play, or what happens if, you know, anytime you go out there with any less of a security blanket than a contract extension would be, and that's what this 1 year, you know, playing out the string and then maybe going onto a franchise tag next year would be, I don't think it helps the relationship between the player and the organization. If the organization legitimately wants to cement a long-term relationship with that player, which the Steelers do with Watt, if you let him play out his fifth year this year and then franchise him each of the next 2 years, and I imagine the number would be somewhere around $18 or $19 million each year, yeah, ultimately you're getting a discount off of what his number will be if you agree to an extension, but you're also essentially just saying, hey, we've got T.J. Watt for three more seasons and then we're done. Because I can't imagine Watt would want to resign in a place that utilized the tag on him at least once, if not twice, Right. So I think that's the way it'll play. I think they'll get something done by the 12th. But I don't foresee T.J. Watt nor the Steelers holding each other's feet to the fire.
All right. What makes you come to that? Let's talk about the Steelers' point of view.
Well, why would they come?
Why would they come to that?
Well, because this is an organization that has to understand that the day Ben Roethlisberger retires, they become a defense and run oriented team. No, I mean, they may very well may be that right now, but certainly once Roethlisberger retires, they will be built on, because they very much believe that their next quarterback, or at least the quarterback that's going to get the next crack after Roethlisberger, is already in the room, whether it's Rudolph or Haskins. So they're going to give one of those guys, most likely Rudolph, when Ben is done, the opportunity. But they also know that there may be some limitations there. They also know they've spent a first-round pick on Najee Harris, so they better well use him. And they know what they have on defense. They know they're capable of being a top 10, if not top 5, defense on a year-to-year basis with the talent that they have in Watt and Fitzpatrick. You lose Watt, that really changes things. But at the same time, you know, is Watt necessarily worth more than a Nick Bosa, more than a Myles Garrett? A lot of people, maybe to this defense and maybe to the Pittsburgh Steelers, he is. Maybe for him, it's not about average annual value and being north of $30 million or around $30 million. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just about how much guaranteed money he gets. And I've heard that could be somewhere in the range of 80-ish, and that would be more than enough to make him the highest paid defensive player in league history. So whether it averages out to 30 a year or not, I think they're going to have to get a little creative, not as creative obviously as they got with the Roethlisberger deal this offseason, because they've got a long time and an expanding salary cap to make the details fit. But they do have to keep in mind a Fitzpatrick extension next offseason. Then what do they do with, you know, whoever else if they do want to keep Joe Hayden? You know, Cam Hayward's cap number goes up exponentially starting next year. So they still do have some moving pieces to figure out. And, you know, losing Roethlisberger's cap hit if they do next year, that would help. But that's not enough when you got your outside edge rusher making $30 million if that's what it ends up being for Watt.
What do you think about it rolling along? Now, look, the cap is going to go up. I mean, the TV deal tells you the cap's going up anyway.
Right.
But what about, it's not a quarterback. What about rolling so much money into one player that's not a quarterback?
Again, I think they're comfortable with it if it's Watt, and I think they're comfortable giving Fitzpatrick what will probably be a baseline-setting deal at safety because they believe he's one of the two or three, if not the best, free safeties in the league. Cam Hayward's got a pretty big contract for an interior defensive lineman. They're willing to invest on the defensive side of the ball because I think they see the writing on the wall that, again, this is going to have to be a team that's based on its defense and its run game. And assuming that they give Mason Rudolph or maybe Dwayne Haskins that first crack at being their starting quarterback as soon as next September. Now, that also gives them the opportunity to figure out, well, is this the way we want to go? Maybe Rudolph or Haskins or whoever it is comes out and falls on their face the day Ben Roethlisberger retires, is terrible. They go 5-12 or 6-11, and they get a top 10 draft pick out of the deal. In that case, you know, you've got cost certainty baked in at your quarterback position and possibly your next franchise quarterback, and maybe you can change your philosophy from there. But they see the writing on the wall that this is now a team that has to be focused on running the ball on offense, controlling the clock more than they have in the past, and not exposing Roethlisberger, as difficult as that may be with the offensive line and the shape it's in right now, and relying on their defense to perhaps win a few games for them.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Steve. Always great.
Chris Mack joining us from Pittsburgh.